most discussions of radio have solely to do with content. Content analysis is the kind of norm for most work of this sort. And it is not the kind of analysis that I find to be totally useful, because it takes the content, often in a written form, transcribed, and analyzes that for its, usually its literary merits and for what it is saying. Now, like anything where you transcribe sound off of tape or off of radio, you have lost a great deal of the actual information, because the sound, first of all, occurs. What you've basically lost is the context. First of all, you've lost the context of it. And the context is in at least two senses. First of all, the context of where the material occurred in an entire program structure, and how that structure was encouraging a certain kind of listening attitude, and therefore what attitude, listening attitude, the content was processed by. And secondly, you lose the context of in what kind of an environment was the radio material being listened to. In other words, put it this way, content analysis would assume an idealized listener, a listener who was paying attention, was actually listening to content, was actually focused on the content. And that is, if you think a little bit about how you normally listen to media, you know that that's certainly not the usual case. We don't spend that 51 hours a week glued to the electroacoustic media that we're involved with. It is simply often on, it's around, and is used in a variety of ways. What we're missing, what we want to try to get at then, is the effect of the radio message as a designed form of communication, that it's designed to function with other things happening at the same time. In radio, it's often called a format of a station format, a radio format. More colloquially, just the station image, but that is a little more complicated. And also, it involves the assumed listening environment. The simple question is, what environment is being listened to in? What simultaneous activities are going on? What kind of ambience is going on, that it's presumably in the foreground against a certain ambience or background sound? What is the listening attitude? What is the purpose or function of the radio in these kind of situations? Then, once we understand something about that, then we will know what the importance of content is. I'm not saying the content is unimportant, but its importance is certainly mainly within the context of a certain kind of, first of all, target audience, a certain kind of market audience, and a certain kind of assumed listening habit. And I will assume here that the majority of radio listening is what I would call distracted listening. It's listening that you're being distracted because you are doing something else simultaneously. And the nature of what it is you're doing simultaneously is, of course, very interesting to understand how radio caters to this kind of simultaneous listening with other activities as accompaniment, something that gets you through, in many cases, a situation that's otherwise unsatisfactory or not complete in itself and not completely demanding on your attention and abilities. The whole notion of it being distracted means that, in fact, you are capable of doing other things and not overloading the sensory input. So obviously, the radio cannot demand any more than the minimal attention, and the other activities can't demand your entire attention either, or they wouldn't be able to coexist. So we can start with knowing at least that much about it. Of course, it always hasn't been that way. If you talk to your grandparents about when radio was first introduced, you know that, in fact, they really were about as close to ideal listeners in this sense of the content analysis as you can imagine. There was radio whenever any electroacoustic or any technology is introduced that radically affects the perceptions, there's always a marvelous period of the total magic of it being the predominating image, that the predominant factor that affects people's reactions to the phenomena. And radio was certainly very much magic in the first days. And really, you have to talk to people from that period and also hear the kind of things that they were listening to to know that from both the producer's point of view and the listener's point of view, it really was quite magical. The magic, first of all, of just being able to hear a disembodied voice, a voice that was removed in time and space from its source. You know, that in itself, really, compared to all of sound history, where sound has been tied to the source, that, of course, was real magic. And the fact that it would be from faraway, exciting places when people didn't travel as much as they do now.